Hello and welcome to an episode of We're Goblins. It's been a hot minute. We're Goblins is a show about buzzwords, pop culture, and the internet through the decades with your friendly and hostile neighborhood goblins, me, Hannah, and Tasha. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. I've been collecting words, reading things, and saying things for my whole life, so I feel like I'm ready to talk about them.
We love that.
Mm-hmm.
An informed host.
She's so informed. She's been speaking for at least 20 years.
Yeah. This is CADR, 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. And something that's just been on my mind, and I believe it's been on everyone's mind, is just everything going on in the news and global politics, and the massacre happening in Palestine. And I don't know, weirdly, we have had this topic about corporate jargons and corporate speak in our little pitch list for a while. And some other interesting internet trend would come up, which felt more important. But right now, it's a moment where nothing feels important and everything feels kind of like, what does it matter? Where I'm like, oh, Tasha and I thought about just diving into this.
Yeah, I mean, there is a sort of uselessness at the core of our topic today,
mm-hmm.
which maybe is the point.
Yeah.
So without further ado, let's talk about the most useless corporate experience you've had? Do you have a memory, a time, a word that you resonate the most with that is when you encountered this sort of like corporate in-speak?
Well, okay. I'm sure I've had several experiences as in like my early 20s, late teens, working at an internship, and I've perhaps blocked that from my memory. But what is interesting is, so this is something corporate jargons are just something that we all are familiar with and we all experience, and something I have been observing, but I don't know if I have strong thoughts and feelings about it. But just doing a bit of research before this episode, people are quite heated about it. And so that was amusing to see. Forbes created, in 2012, Forbes created a bingo sheet of 50 moronic corporate buzzwords. And someone, and there was apparently a comic strip as well, but this is unrelated, decades ago, where you just have your bingo sheet at every meeting and then you keep checking off what your employees and boss is saying. And I was like, haha, this is funny.
It's a survival tactic.
Absolutely. Yes, that's what it is. Nothing that jumps off jumps at me right away, but I suppose, I mean, we all use it to some extent, right? The lines are blurred in the sense, what is an idiom in English language, but then what is corporate jargon? Sometimes they can be one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
One that maybe, if I were to say, what is the worst offender? So, you know, when people say, let's circle back to it.
Yep.
And I just, to me, feels hella avoidant.
Because it is.
You know? And it almost feels like you're really trying to, like, shut me out.
Yeah, it's like, let's circle back never.
Yeah, essentially. And I'm like, hey, not to, like, make it really personal, but it also, like, rude.
Do you find it passive aggressive?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's
that's a good point.
There's a touch of passive aggressive attitude in there.
Yep.
You know? Though I have probably emailed this to someone somewhere. I'm sorry. Because I'm avoidant.
If you're listening to this show, Tasha, sorry.
I am sorry. Because sometimes there are matters that you can't address right now,
mm-hmm.
but you certainly can down the line.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I hate emails. And so it's easier just to say,
let's circle back.
And when I was new to using it, I thought it was like cute. But now the overuse has turned it into something not cute.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. A part of me perhaps romanticizes emails because, I mean, no one writes letters anymore. So the only thing close we have akin to letters are emails. And of course, I don't mean corporate emails because there's nothing romantic about corporate emails.
Or is there?
But I suppose my problem with let's circle back and phrases like that, because yes, as you pointed out, there is a tone of passive aggressiveness to it. But also, oh, we have a call right now.
Oh, sure. Let's hear it. When we can get to you.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Greetings.
Welcome to Word Goblins. Do you have something to say about corporate lingo?
Just, you know, synergy.
Oh, synergy's on my list.
How could it not be?
Why does synergy bother you so much?
Well, you know, it's one word for working all together, I guess, but...
It is. Know, I mean, there are many words for the same topic, I guess, but do you think it's overuse is what bothers you so much?
maybe not presently, but it was.
I understand.
I'm not in a corporate environment.
Neither are we.
Yeah, and yet I wrote down synergy as an example.
Oh, I did as well.
Yeah.
There is just something really annoying about it.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. You circle back to it. The other one for that is that gets me is, let's put a pin in it.
Ooh,
oh, yes. Yep.
Yep. I have said
same
that.
Sort of idea. Same idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's not overtly aggressive or even passive aggressive language, but I think that there's something that's like too cute about it that is just like a little infuriating, mm-hmm. especially with put a pin in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is very cutesy and maybe best left out of the boardroom.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Do you have one that you like?
Corporate speak that I like? Yeah. No, I'm not going to go.
No,
this is the consensus.
Okay, no, just everything, all of them need to go.
Oh, well, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
Love the firsthand experience, you know?
Sure. As an aside,
uh-huh.
I was your first caller ever.
I recognize your voice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Yeah, hello. And you did the follow-up show on the word woke that we talked about, too?
We did.
We did, yeah.
We heeded that request. It was quite good.
I heard some of that show.
Thank you.
And it was funny because I heard a rebroadcast of the initial show that I phoned in on. And I'm listening to it. And I'm like, this guy's saying a lot of good things because I don't recognize my own voice over the airwaves.
There you go.
That's me.
Out of body experience hearing yourself on air.
Yeah.
Hey, I forget your name. Can you remind me?
It's Al.
Al, okay, cool. Nice to talk to you again,
yeah.
Al.
Yeah.
I've listened a few times in the weeks and months since. It's always a fun show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's I'm only ever listening during a commute, so I don't get to hear everything all the time that I want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just so everyone knows, we are now broadcasting at 3 o'clock instead of 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So we've upped our little time slot, but
very good.
Here we are.
And so again, a second aside on that the woke show that you did when you talked about that, you got into history of it and first uses and instances of being woke, and you mentioned a blues singer talking about to other black guys in the South, watch out these places, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this?
Yeah.
Lead Belly?
Yep.
Of course, it's Lead Belly. And as you know, for a Word Goblin show, I thought you might want to know that part.
Of course. Thank you for the aside.
Yeah.
I was listening. I'm like, Lead Belly. Because that one person I knew and the other I was not sure of. And when you mentioned he's a 20s blues singer, like, okay, yes, there we go.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, thanks. Thanks for that.
And this is, I'm sorry. This is a compulsion that I have to point shit like that out.
I mean, we are making a really pedantic show about words.
Yeah.
So I think we're all in agreement here.
We're all nitpicky.
Yeah.
It's all good.
All right.
Yeah.
And another request for a new show, origins of phrases and whatnot, because I always like to search these things out,
Do you have a phrase in mind?
Close but no cigar, and I know the origins of that one, and get the cold shoulder, I know that, but the one I've never heard a really good explanation for is, like, knock on wood. Like, why does knocking on wood preserve good luck? I've never heard a...
That's a good idea. We have a show in the pipeline that is adjacent to this kind of thing, and I think maybe it'd be interesting to keep these like turns of phrases
yeah,
in as well as something to talk about, because I think that there are always stories attached to these things that we don't often get to talk about. We just know they're like modern interpretation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And people use them without the background.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like drinking the Kool-Aid, for example, that which came up during my corporate jargon research, actually.
Oh, good.
And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was reminded of the history, which I had known, but then you get so divorced from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't Kool-Aid.
No. And it wasn't Kool-Aid.
I don't know how the Kool-Aid people didn't disassociate themselves very, like, straight away with that. But
and Kool-Aid stock took a plummet.
Sales have plummeted since that point, I'm pretty sure.
Well, thanks again for calling.
Yeah, thanks,
and
Al.
for listening.
Well, yeah. Good work, and I look forward to future shows.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Take care.
All right.
Well, as someone who's sort of a novice to taking phone calls, I am very excited about that. And thanks again, Al, for calling in again. And
yeah,
with the
thanks,
good suggestions.
Al, our true fan.
I don't often, when we're sitting in this booth, think about people listening, mm-hmm. but just a small thank you to those that do.
Yeah, that's an out-of-body experience.
It is quite an out-of-body experience.
Yeah. And it's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So something, I'm just gathering my thoughts in real time, mm-hmm. live on air right now.
The magic of radio.
Yeah, I know. It's beautiful. Welcome. I was ranting about Let's Circle Back to That. And then I think a lot of folks have gripe with that. And then we talked about passive aggressive undertones, phrases that are cutesy, and perhaps it's also just trying to package it neatly, but things often are not like that in real life. As you said with, I don't remember, was it, let's put a pin in it?
Put a pin in it, yeah.
Sort of thing. Or, synergy, I don't think I have used, but that definitely had a peak and then a downfall. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think anybody uses it now.
It was the most noted, I think.
Yeah.
And so because of that, it mm-hmm. stopped being used quite as much.
Something that I remember as being the cool phrase, I don't know if you experienced that, and then it's something that irks people now, or at least irks me, thinking outside the box.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
It was something that's like, oh, let's be creative and cool and making our corporate jobs interesting, mm-hmm. and thinking outside the box. But it almost feels, I don't know.
It feels infantilizing. I think in the same way put a pin in it is like it's this cuteness. It's
condescending, hey?
Yeah, it's a little bit condescending because oftentimes you're not talking about projects which are overtly like fun or creative or exciting or poetic or expressive. There are things that are ultimately boring, you know?
I'll say it. Dumb little head.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about like clients, like advertising clients, and you're using these like really cute and evocative turns of phrase, I feel like there's a mismatch, and maybe that's mm-hmm. why we're upset about those ones.
Yeah, there's this contradictory nature to it, but it's also almost like I think it's the deception.
Yes.
That's my problem. It's a deception. It's like, do not try to oversell this to me. I know this job is to make you rich and be a salesperson, and there's nothing fun about that.
Yeah, so there are these examples which are in this realm of like kind of cutesy, infantilizing, maybe more poetic, creative sounding for really boring tasks, mm-hmm. Like quotidian activities. And then there's also this language that's trying to like upsell something to you, or it's like language that's like really inflated.
Okay, example?
So synergy is one of them. I think things like talking about bandwidth and operationalizing and mm-hmm. parallel paths.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thing, it sounds larger than what it is because ultimately the minute tasks that you're doing are not that grand. Like, maybe they are. Here's the thing is I've never held a super corporate job. I currently don't, and I never really have. But my experience in this, and this is why I asked you, Hina, about if you had experience in words that particularly bothered you. For me, it was my first job when I was a teenager, which, like, I don't know if this is experience that many people have had, but I grew up in the suburbs, and my first job was in retail. I worked at H&M, and I had to text a friend earlier today because I couldn't remember what the words were, and they just came out like a flood, and then we just couldn't stop saying them because we remembered them so vividly. Ooh. They gave us all these walkie-talkies, and we said things like, I'm heading to the A spot in 20 over the walkie-talkie, or like, can I get a status on blank? Or we shortened things, and we had all these acronyms, and there was this like in-group nature to doing these things. Of course, the action of holding a walkie-talkie makes a teenager feel pretty great. But I think the thing for me is like using all this lingo and being in front of customers and saying things like, can I get the status on the A spot in whatever? It's like selling the job back to you. It like gives you this sort of self-importance that I think maybe happens on a larger scale in corporate worlds that I'm not familiar with. But at the time, the job sucked. Everyone was unhappy. We were being taken advantage of. I think minimum wage was at $7. Horrifying.
Yikes.
And it was a bad job. They're never good jobs. But talking like this gave me a sense of self-importance. And it also kind of gave me this sense of like in-groupism. Like I was part of a group of people who all understood each other talking this way. And I can see that scaling up to different corporate environments.
Did you feel... dare I say, empowered?
Oh, I dared to feel. I did. I think that's the truth. And it's really sad because, you know, you'd get to work and you'd be kind of depressed because you have like an 8-hour shift and you have like a 15-minute break and you're paid like crap. And
you get a walkie-talkie.
You get a walkie-talkie.
That's cool.
And you get to say cool things that people don't understand. And you feel like a little better about your tasks.
Yeah.
And you feel like they're a little bit more important than they actually are because these words meant things like, A spot was like, I think, a display in the middle of the store with mannequins. And like asking for someone's 20 is always cool. Asking for someone's status, always cool.
Of course.
Minute things that were inflated and like empowering for people. And I think that's still what we do in these really boring, regular jobs is find ways to like make our words feel more powerful to ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's what bothers us. But
thank you for sharing that bittersweet story. You're right, strong. No, definitely. I've had experiences like that as well, where there is kind of this farce that you, and maybe I'm being dramatic about it, but really, essentially, there's, thank you, feel so seen. There's this farce, and it's almost like a smokescreen.
Yes.
Give me the status on that A spot. Don't complain about your minimum wage. Things are going to be fine.
Exactly.
Kind of thing, right? And it's I was while I was doing my research, I found something that this prof at University of UC Berkeley, who teaches at School of Business, said, and that's what it boils down to. And so Jennifer Chapman says, jargon masks real meaning. People use it as a substitute for thinking hard and clearly about their goals and the direction that they want to give others.
People use it as a substitute for thinking hard? It's such a burn.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And
coming in with the burninator.
That is quite sassy. But the latter part. Clearly about their goals and the direction that they want to give others, because often, oh, you know what? I'm thinking of a pop culture reference, which was so hilarious and I think did such a good job mimicking corporate speak and office culture in general. So I'm talking about The Office, of course. And there was an episode where... one of the new bosses asks Jim to give me a rundown of the sales, and he's like, oh, yeah, sure. He has no idea what rundown means, but he has too much pride to ask. Because, of course, like, it's rundown. And he spends the entire episode asking everyone what rundown means, but in very subtle, indirect ways. And nobody has any idea. And, yeah, what does rundown mean?
I guess sometimes these words offer a way to, like, impede language. Like, if you don't really know exactly what you're looking for, you can use this as a placeholder. So it's, like, both empowering and impeding, which is a strange combination.
Yeah.
But perhaps if you don't know what you're talking about, you do want to just empower yourself. So that does make sense.
You know what's interesting, though? I almost see it as almost like an obstruction of conversation, because going back to the episode that I just was talking about, and this is true, we don't feel comfortable because we don't want to come off as like foolish or someone who doesn't know, I don't know, what synergy means. And so we wouldn't feel comfortable asking back. And then that ends the conversation right there. And so even if the person who's using these jargons and also doesn't know what they mean, and they're like, oh, maybe the other person's going to ask for a clarification and then I can expand more. But I feel like it's not inviting. It almost like shuts people out.
Yeah. And also you are not likely to be questioned on what you're trying to achieve.
No. Yeah.
For the nefarious flair here.
Absolutely. Something that I was reading and it sort of came to me, a lot of times when we think about reading press releases from corporations or the statements they give are loaded, mm-hmm. loaded with corporate jargon. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard because it's almost like a minefield where you're trying to like, oh my God, I don't want to get hit. And then what is this person really saying? And it's so convoluted and it's so obscure that you just give up in trying to understand. But it also masks, say, how many corporations we know with poor labor practices, like most of them. Mm-hmm. And they will sell it to you as like, we're cutting down on labor costs. Or, I mean, that's not super corporate jargon. But even then, like, ultimately, if you dissect that, what that means is someone is going to bear the brunt of it. And what that means is paying folks below minimum wage or having poor labor practices. But, or no, actually, there was another one that came up, downscaling operations.
Oh, I mean, yeah, that does sort of like hide the intention.
Yeah.
It's a multifaceted action that maybe a lot of people would disagree with, but if you were to couch it this way.
Downscaling operation. And yeah. As you said, things seem so big and larger than life, but ultimately, I think it's also taking away humanity from tasks where it's like, oh, scaling down operations, but then there are people who are going to be impacted directly and face the repercussions, but you're not going to be talking about like folks, you're not going to talk about labor and stuff. So anyway, I went down a rabbit hole there.
No, this is interesting because what I also was thinking, there's the small scale that was the employees at these places that may use this language to empower themselves or sell a job back to themselves, mm-hmm. Which I think is intentional by management to disseminate this type of language. But then also outside of working for a place, moral leadership has been ceded to corporations in the modern day that we live in. Mm-hmm. We're always looking to these companies for their mission statements or for their responses to things. Mm-hmm. And they couch a lot of values in these like platitudes that they'll use, like yeah. talking about respect and trust and integrity. And like, I'm reading this book right now that I can't remember the name of, so I'm sorry. It's really quite good. It's about the turn of users, the term users online and how we went from being like people to users. And the author is talking a lot about Google and Google's operation. And I remembered that their mission statement was like, don't be evil. And it's a classic example of these like giant platitudes and these big platform, these big companies really that we look to for like moral direction.
Yikes.
Yeah. Or to respond to things as if they were people. And I think mm-hmm. that is a little bit of what you're talking or speaking to, is this like this idea that maybe we've like anthropomorphized like Snapchat or something mm-hmm. and we like cede to their moral leadership in one way or another. And it that's like kind of housed in their mission statement language that they use. I don't know any other examples of like company mission statements. I found one for Snapchat, but it's quite like there's not a lot of like moralizing language in here, but just as an example, they say that their mission statement is to empower people to express themselves, to live in the moment, mm-hmm. learn about the world, and have fun.
Mm.
Which like they're lofty, yeah. yes, but it's I think chill. There's a lot of like value positing there
mm.
and we've ended up in this space where we have corporate lingo because we look to these giants to be like leaders in some way. That's the cultural moment that maybe leads to this way of speaking.
Yeah, that's definitely a food for thought. How about we take a quick break?
Yes.
And come back. I definitely have a lot more thoughts.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area.
I'm getting static. Can you hear me now? Cannot hear you. Is Al phoning back? FYI. Yeah. Hello?
Welcome. SSN at gmail.com. Reach out. Together, we can make music. Join us.
Is back in season. Join the celebration on October 21st from 6 o'clock at Jackson's General, or catch the live broadcast on CITR 101.9 FM. Jam up to tunes from Doozy, Anteater Eaters, Fool, Boy Motor, Nest Nuss, Sunny Daydream, and Nariella. See you there.
What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?
I love CITR 101.9 FM.
I love CITR 1.0.1.9 FM.
What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing if you're not listening to Planet Innit Flows on CITR 101.99 FM every other Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Pacific?
Hello and Welcome back. I also should mention we played two songs on the at the top of the hour.
Oh, yes, we did.
The second song was Businessman by Mother Mother, and that was my pick. And
I opened the show with Blight Year by local cosmic black metal act Anti-God Hand.
Nice.
Former Discorder feature circa probably this time last year.
Cool. Love that. Hitting our CanCon, both of us.
Yes.
So I think we were having, we had a call, but we were facing some technical difficulties.
Yeah, unfortunately, there was a lot of static and...
Yeah. So, part two.
Yeah, Hannah, take it away. You had some research that you wanted to bring to this.
I did, yeah. So, as I mentioned earlier, that I had been feeling just pretty lukewarm about corporate speak. I mean, sure, there is one thing as like really, if I get an email that is entirely marred with corporate speak, that's going to be really annoying. I mean, use it sparingly, right? Like, mm-hmm. Sure, use phrases here and there, but there is something as like overdoing it, because already business language is so over the top. And so tone it down a notch is what I would say, right? But it was interesting to see folks studying business or folks in management and that kind of corporate culture talking about this. And I stumbled upon this research that talks about how folks belonging to coming from lower socioeconomic status are more likely to use jargon to compensate their insecurities or inadequacy, obviously fueled by systemic barriers. And it seems like in one of the experiments, folks were scanning the titles of dissertations and master's theses, and they discovered folks belonging to more lower-ranked schools were using more jargon than from folks from, I don't know, like more elite schools. And this is interesting because I also think there is something as in-group and out-group situation going on, right? Mm-hmm. And because folks, and it's almost like this like status symbol where if I could just use all this jargon and kind of like the quote unquote fake it till you make it, then I will fit in and I will belong. And so I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah, it's the perfect way to describe my experience being a teenager working in low paid retail environments and other awful jobs. Mm-hmm. But I think that's interesting in the way that like jargon in any institution can function that way for people who exist on the precipice or on the fringe of something. The best way to feel like part of the group is to use the words. And this can be as nefarious as it is in, say, a cult, like mm-hmm. Scientology, which has a lot of like in-group language and a lot of acronyms and things that you have to constantly keep on top of to mm-hmm. be a part of the group. Or for a personal example, going to art school and being in crits with other artists and throwing around like very jargony art words.
Crits.
Yes.
Also a jargon.
Also jargon. Yeah, sorry. Critiques. When you're doing a critique, one that used to really infuriate me, for example, was saying like the white cube, which is like an offhand to gallery spaces being just like white walled gallery spaces. And
I did not know that.
It's meant to sort of infer this like negativity that the space brings to artworks. Like maybe they want to show work in a more like colorful area. I'm struggling for words here, but
yeah,
it's basically like a criticism of the gallery world and showing work in a really austere environment. But I think that, like, I wouldn't criticize using jargon like that because I also feel like it's a way to feel a part of something. Mm-hmm. It's a way to show people that you too are like them. If you're new to crits, I wouldn't get mad at someone for talking about how, say, the white cube could, like, really dampen a work's energy or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's a bad example, but you know what I mean. Like, it's often people who are more on the fringe of something who want to feel part of it and maybe aren't in a place of power over the conversation. And it's a good way to grab that.
Absolutely. There are merits. I think there is some merit to these jargons, and be it in a specific industry, as Tasha mentioned, in the art world, or my experience with media and journalism, we have a lot of jargons. I mean, editors saying kill your darlings, and the average person will be like, huh? Like, wait, what? Kill my what? Puppies? Like, what? And so stuff like that, right? But then it's saying something or referring to something which is going to be a long conversation in a very succinct phrase. Mm-hmm. And so there is a purpose to using that. And then, yeah, something we've been talking about, it does facilitate social bonding. It does facilitate, like, oh, yes, I go here too and you go here too kind of thing. And then it is also, again, ultimately, like, does add to your social currency, and it also shows that, okay, so this person knows, is aware of social cues, for example, right? And so I can understand the temptation of using corporate jargon, and why people use it is something that I'm always fascinated by. And yeah, folks often who are more disenfranchised, I can understand them feeling more compelled to use it and them being in a lesser position to, say, like, critique it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, something else I want to say as my kind of final thesis on specifically corporate lingo is that I find that a lot of these words are lifelike but not quite human. They bring up a sense of unease and disgust in a lot of us. Normally when you ask people for examples of corporate lingo, they, like, mimic vomiting or something. Like, people are very disgusted by it, and so therefore I think corporate lingo specifically enacts the uncanny valley a little bit. It's like this almost human entity in language that's not quite human, and I think that is precisely why we're so disgusted with it, because it's not quite real, but it's real to you when you're in the environment. And people make criticisms of it, saying that it is robotic, for example, which is, like, pretty perfectly uncanny.
It's clunky and awkward.
Yep.
But we pretend that it makes sense when really a lot of times we have no idea what the other person meant.
Yeah.
I mean, Tasha was just talking about how her and her friend were talking about this, and then your friend has gripes with, let's take this offline.
Yes.
And we both were trying to dissect it, but we couldn't really come to a conclusion.
Yeah, she in fact brought it up by also sending me a meme that involved, like, a guy vomiting while that statement was
nice
being shown. And I think that, like, visible disgust with something like that is essentially uncanny valley behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's a really good point. And something else that comes up for me right now is that, and not to be a Marxist on Maine, but it's really attaching human-like characteristics to not just goods and services and commodities, but like corporations. And so how often have you heard phrases like corporate values?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're a corporation, you don't have values.
Yeah.
And like values in quotations, ultimately, in the sense, like, if we look, we cannot, and yeah, you mentioned this, like looking at it for a moral compass, but then we also don't have an option, obviously, in late stage capitalism, where these corporations have a social responsibility to be thinking about their footprint and thinking about how they're contributing to the climate crisis. And so it's such a catch-22 where it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, part of me is nihilist. And it's like, what did you expect? It's almost as akin to looking at celebrities to say the right thing when we're at war or when a genocide is happening. And yep. it's like, oh, obviously this celebrity who has mass appeal said the dumbest thing ever. I'm looking at Amy Schumer right now. But then it's also like, oh, but you have this responsibility. So many people follow you, and this is very problematic. So we almost live in this like weird, insidious, like Sim City environment. Yeah.
Well, I always say that I think celebrities live in clown town, and maybe also corporations live in clown town. Like, they can all live in clown town together, and like, you know, they think that they can speak out to what's happening in the world, but they have no idea because they live in clown town.
You just put it aptly. The three C's: corporations, celebrities, and clown town.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we can ever actually like look to our corporate environments for value.
No.
But I think we do. And I think that doing the right thing is a highly personal thing, but doing the right thing by the company is a very easy thing, especially when the company gives you
yeah.
a set of actions and words.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Definitely. And yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts?
So I guess to wrap it up,
mm-hmm.
I think at the very least there is a way to stop hating on corporate language so much, because it is an entry point to understanding a thing, or it is a way to, I don't know, empower yourself in a situation wherein you're probably very empowered.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of the time our gripes are just that it's gibberish, which it is.
It is.
But, I mean, a lot of it is because of the environments that we're in. And you wouldn't have to seek value in your shitty job if the job wasn't shitty.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I come at it from. But I also don't work in a very corporate job.
Mm-hmm.
So I exist on the fringes of this all the time. I've said these things in email, and I'm a perpetrator, and I'm sorry.
I have as well. And I can apologize for that. Yeah. no, sorry. I don't know why I hesitated.
As per my last email.
thank you for your time and consideration. So I suppose there, oh, actually, there was something that I wanted to talk about, sort of the history of it, and because that's something that I'm always really fascinated by. And a lot of folks have linked the history of, like, where did corporate lingo just come from, and how did we start speaking this way and pretending that it makes sense when it really doesn't, is around the Great Depression. Apparently, so right after, because, yeah, really thinking about how our work culture has shifted. So from industrialization, when workers were just seen as robots and there was no kind of connection or corporate quote-unquote culture, and it was very much like, we want assembly line workers. And then after that, when a lot of shifts started happening to office jobs and more office culture,
mm-hmm.
and desk jobs, and where often there would be rifts and feuds between laborers and management, And so then more and more people started thinking of like, oh, how do we sort of try to meet their needs, or how do we try to at least pretend that we care? And it's somewhere around that time when things like, I don't know, like water cooler talk. And so it's almost like a semblance of autonomy, but not really.
Yeah. And it's a way to impede communication,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're trying to shield things from your laborers.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. It's also, again, I think of all the suspicious ways in which people get fired,
mm-hmm.
because obviously that it has a stigma where often it's a lot of victim blaming, when it's like, yeah, I mean, of course, sometimes it's like, yeah, this person was at fault and they should have gotten fired for whatever reasons. But if someone unfairly gets dismissed, corporations have so many ways to mask it.
Right.
Like laying off. And they have very different connotations. And laying off does not have that heavy of a blow than like saying we're firing this person versus like dismissal versus all of these ways. And so I think sometimes, unfortunately, with corporate speak, you can really hide behind it.
Yep.
And try to play the nice guy.
It's very manipulative.
Yes, yeah. That's it. Ultimately, it can be very manipulative.
Yeah. It's a way to say something to someone without feeling very human about it.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, when you're on the receiving end of something like this, you will say that it was like a cold email, or like the way they handled it wasn't very kind. And it's a way to get away from like the human equation of working with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, in those ways that you outlined, it's quite a manipulative subculture.
Yeah. It's saying things without actually saying it.
Yeah.
And it is also sometimes an easy way to shield responsibility.
Yeah.
And to avoid accountability.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe that's why I went down the road of it feeling quite, like, uncanny. But more succinctly is that it's just manipulative, mm-hmm. especially if it's coming from a higher rung of power.
Yep, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's peer-to-peer, I think it's a way of trying to understand and fit in.
Mm-hmm.
If it's top-down, I think it's very manipulative in a way of sort of masking behavior, mm-hmm. masking bad behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you summed it up really well. It's like who's saying it, and then it can often really be damaging in the sense, yeah, if it's coming down from an authority figure and considering their power dynamics versus like someone who is, I don't know, an entry-level employee,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, yeah, of course you're using this language. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then I would be way more skeptical.
Yeah, it's easy to shut down someone if you can just throw in, like, a large, almost meaningless word.
Yeah, absolutely.
I need to make a quick correction before we end the show.
Yeah.
Just for myself, in my heart, for me, so that I know that I know that I was wrong. But
go ahead.
I said that I played a song by Auntie Godhand, mm-hmm. Which was actually called The Horde at the End of Language.
Yes.
Off of the album Blight Year. So if anyone out there heard that and cares, it's a really good album and you should check it out.
Thank you.
No problem.
All right. So we are nearing the end of our show, and this was fun.
Yeah. I feel synergized.
That's awesome. Nice doing business with you.
Well, circle back next week, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, let's put a pin in this. And same time next week, we will come up with, I don't know, another spicy We're Goblins episode.
Yep.
Or not. We're tired.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. And thanks, Al, for calling in.